Final show for the week, Overdrive, off and running, TSN 1050 on the TSN app, worldwide, TSN1050.ca. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. Bit of a different experience for me this afternoon. I know, Noodles, you're going through the same thing.
I am?
Yeah, we're hoping.
What's your routine looking like, though?
Well, we're hoping that we can get back on TV at some point. We've got to deal with some technical hurdles, and we've got to see if we can make this work because we're doing live shows right now. But, you know, there are some members of our TSN community that have access to my video right now because I'm up on Skype.
Yeah.
And it's not live. No one can see it except for the few people that are, I guess, trying to do some testing
Rick
right now.
Rick Caroli?
No.
I don't think Nick is a part of it. No, our boy David's.
Dave and isn't Phil involved?
Yeah, I think Phil's
Phil
probably,
Connors.
Phil's
yeah,
creeping
Phil
in the background there. But it's always a dangerous game when you're like, yeah, go ahead. Like, just watch. And
yeah, have access.
Yeah, have go access. Ahead. And they're like,
so
no,
is it like you have to dress up or they're just no. Watch and tell me what you think?
No, I look like a slob right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I'm wearing a T-shirt and 5 minutes before, well, maybe about 7 minutes before the show, I realized I forgot to eat lunch and I have been stuffing a Belgian waffle down just before we came on. And I was like, oh, God, I'm on camera. So Dave is sitting in the control room watching me just bury this Belgian waffle.
Right.
And at least Hazy took some time. He's, you know, yucking it up with his new best friend.
MJD, my guy.
How did
my
that
guy.
Go?
That
He's
was really cool.
Such an ass kisser. Like, you act
oh,
like
really?
They're your best. You have to understand, like, me and Noodles are your buddies. Those guys just want... they don't like you.
What's
they
that
want airtime.
Dwayne Casey likes him.
I just saw the pic where you're like laughing and he's trying to act like he's laughing. He wasn't laughing with you. He was like, I got to make this loser feel like I'm his buddy for 25 minutes and that's
it. All right,
it.
Well, let's explain what happened here because, for starters, that's completely fake news.
No, it's not fake.
Fake
he
news.
Does not like you. He does not
yeah,
want to be your friend.
He's my guy. I guarantee if I shot him a text right now, he would not respond with, either who is this or how did you get my number? He
okay,
would be,
do you have his
fine.
Cell number?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't.
Well, there's a starter.
Yeah, there's
but
a starter.
But I guarantee you, you get his cell number from the grappler and just say, send him a text saying, what's up, bud?
Well, I'd have to explain, you know, who I am, but he knows who I am because I did an Instagram Live earlier today with right. Maurice Jones-Drew, who should be in the Hall of Fame, my guy. Love MJD. All-time great running back. And he was the one that was on the show last week. You guys could have jumped on board. He came on your show too and he said, hey, listen, I'm looking to fire up an Instagram live chat. Who wants to be a part of it? I said, I'll do it. And he went live today at 2:00. He invited me in and I was talking to him for like 25 minutes. And I was of the impression that I would basically be interviewing him in a way. It would be a back right. and forth. He was the one throwing questions at me because a lot of our listeners were the ones sending in comments. And
okay, yeah, but here's how it goes, Hazy B. When he floats out the idea and he says, yeah, let's fire up an IG Live next week, me and Noodles are like, yeah, yeah, sounds great. We'll get on that. You? Yeah. You're like, yeah, like I'm doing it.
What's wrong with that? I have nothing else to do.
I'm just saying, that's not a big league move. We just kind of like, yeah, yeah, we're working
not
on
a
it.
Big league
a
move.
Big league move. He played the National Football League. Like,
right.
What are you talking about? Do you know how much bigger that is than the NHL in the States?
Nah, you just like telling people, yeah, I know JD Drew or whatever the guy's name is.
Maurice Jones Drew.
Yeah. We're boys.
Yeah, he's my guy now. He's my guy. The next time he comes on, it'll be him and I. We'll be probably reliving our
do yourself
Instagram
a favor
live.
And Noodles and me a favor. Do everyone a favor and pre-tape. And you and your guy can have a love fest and tell each other how cool you are, and we don't have to partake.
Now,
I didn't
know
ask you
that,
to.
But I know that at the end of the conversation, they'll go, thanks, Brian. You are the
oh,
voice of
yeah.
reason.
He'll
you're
have,
the voice
have
of reason in Toronto.
Voice of the NFL. I'm
the voice
of
the
NFL in Toronto.
Yeah, so basically now you're the voice of the NFL. You're the voice of the NBA. I don't know if Mulz has got that drop, but like we got to hear Dwayne Casey kiss your ass too. Like, thanks, Brian. You know,
you're the voice of reason in sports media, or no? Yeah. What is the exact?
You represent the NBA as far as the sports media is concerned there in Toronto.
I don't remember anyone saying that about you two stiffs.
No, never.
Oh, good point, Brian.
Thank you, Dwayne.
Yeah. Honestly, anyone says that about hockey, then I'll come through the screen.
Oh, I'll bet you it would happen. It's going to happen. I'll bet it'll happen.
I have actually, people have reached out to me because I would say, and I can say this quite confidently, I think Brian is kind of the pulse of Leaf Nation. The pulse, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like the voice of sports media in Toronto.
Not the voice, the pulse. Like, if I want to know how the reaction is going to be for the general public of Leaf fans, I think, Brian, you've got a good eye, like a good understanding of it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I try and come in, and I'm pretty level-headed. I don't get worked up about too much. And then, you know, you're a passionate guy. You kind of wear it on your sleeve. Brian, I think you're the barometer of Leaf Nation.
Thank you. See, there's another. Thank you, Noodles. Wow, this is great. My confidence today. Dwayne Casey Clips, Noodles calling me the voice of Leafs Nation.
JD Drew.
The barometer.
MJD calling me the voice of football in Canada.
You're not the voice of Leaf Nation. You're the barometer. And what I mean by that is when I say, you know what, Leaf Nation is off their rocker today. They're crazy. You may echo it that day and be like, I'm telling you why, Dion this. And you know what I mean? Like,
right.
I can actually tell how Leaf Nation is by your mood, by your takes, and I think that's a big thing. And that's not just me. I don't know how many times I've got people that send me a note like, your boy Hayes is going to have a meltdown today, or you know what I mean? Like, it throughout, like people from Vancouver, people from Calgary, people from St. Louis, like, they all know you are kind of the pulse of Leaf Nation.
Well, I appreciate that, Dwayne Casey. Thank you for those kind words, and I'll accept that. It's I mean, those are lofty expectations, but I'm just one man, and I'm trying to
get a guest on. Get a guest on.
I'm trying to bring, you know, whatever I can to the table, and if I succeed, obviously I'll be very grateful, and it sounds like the people are very, very happy with what I'm bringing to the table. So thank you, Noodles.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you, Maurice Jones-Drew. Thank you, Dwayne Casey.
That's a good point, Brian.
at some point today, you will compliment me on something. I don't know what it's going to be.
Highly unlikely.
Probably golf. Probably something to do with golf. But speaking of Leafs Nation, you know, we've got a couple things that we're going to look back on today, because Roberto Luongo is going to join us in about a half an hour. And that was a trade that we were all expecting to happen that never happened. And that was one of the bigger debate points probably of the past decade. Should they even acquire Luongo because of the cap hit, the amount of years he had on his deal, and where they were as a franchise? Remember, he was at the top of his game still when he was in Vancouver.
Right.
And when he got to Florida, clearly it worked out really well for him. And I think Roberto would be the first one to tell us, and I'm sure you know the answer to this, Noodles, that he wanted to go to Florida, and he was ecstatic when he went back. And now he's living there. His jersey's been retired, and we all know the history of Luongo in Florida. But there was, like a year, give or take, year and a half, where there felt like there was a courting period between Burke, Nonis, the Maple Leafs, Mike Gillis, Vancouver, and whether or not they can pull off a trade, what it would cost, what Luongo would bring to the table if he was here, how much he would stabilize that position, whether or not they could build around him or build with him.
Well, let me just float this out there, because I believe this was kind of, was this before 2013? Like, I think it was right in that wheelhouse, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I think it was. I don't remember when he went back to Florida, but it was around that era.
Would you confidently say that Game 7 looks different?
Absolutely.
If Luongo's in the net?
No question.
Luongo's
in the net, and they're up 4-1, they win. Probably 4-2 or 4-3.
I don't disagree
Not
with
even
that.
A question.
But that's...
Everybody talks about... you know, what the hell happened in that third period? It's not like Reimer had his equipment on in that third. Like, I mean, Patrice Bergeron took a wrister from the blue line, and it went under the bar like a Al McKinnis slap shot.
Jesus. There was eight bodies in front of him. That one, I get it. Listen, there was a lot of blame to go around, but we all knew when they were going in overtime, that game was over. Boston won.
It was over.
They were going to win it.
Over.
Like, they were going to win it for sure, but... You know, I just think of now the rebuild would have happened. It may have just happened later. You know, things would have probably changed. But at that time, you add somebody like Roberto Luongo onto a team in a shortened season, and you have to look back and maybe go wonder what could have been.
Absolutely. It would have been a game-changing trade. It would have been a monster. I mean, Luongo, it would have been like when they signed Cujo, when they signed Belfour. Like, we're talking a future Hall of Famer who was towards the end of his prime, but I think still in his prime and still more than capable of being a top five goalie in the league. And they couldn't find a goalie.
Like, but maybe they don't get Matthews because of it.
But exactly. You know what I mean? That's the ripple effect. Exactly. If you've got Luongo, what's the cap situation like right now?
Right? And you're not choosing. And here's the other thing. You may not be choosing Morgan Riley at five and Marner at four. You know what I mean?
Like, changed everything, yeah.
It could change. You know, that pick could have been 12. You don't know. Like, that's the thing, how maybe one thing potentially could have set the course of your organization in a different direction.
Well, after that 2013 season when they blew the 4-1 lead, we all know who they picked. Freddie the Goat.
Oh, really?
Frederick Gauthier. Maybe he's not still on the board if they're picking 25th instead of 21st, I think it was.
I tailor my game after Jordan Stahl.
Maybe they're not finding the second coming of Jordan Stahl. I don't know. But
exactly.
That was one trade that we all discussed. Everyone had opinion on whether or not it made sense, whether or not they could do it.
That might have been our first ever draft interview.
It was. It was in New York.
You know who we had on earlier before that? Jerry Bettman.
Did we have Bettman on the floor?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were like set up way in the back.
Yeah. So I remember that.
Oh, I wasn't there with you guys. Yeah.
No, you weren't. I don't know why you weren't there, Noodles,
but you bailed.
Yeah, I don't know why.
I don't remember why you weren't there. But you definitely weren't. It was O and I, and we were there for every round. Remember that, O? Like, we were the Friday night.
Christ almighty.
Friday night, I believe it was the first round. It was like, okay, we're good. Like, this is great. And it was the McKinnon draft. It was a great draft.
Yeah.
McKinnon, Seth Jones, Barkov. Yeah, it was a great draft, and we had some great interviews. And then we woke up on the Saturday morning and said, we have to go back and listen to these guys pick all the way through the seventh round. And we were still on the radio. We did like a six-hour show on the Saturday.
Dude, it was death.
It was
a death march.
Death. We're like, well, at least we're back in the clock.
No, the worst thing was,
I'm
pretty sure we might have had a time Friday when we got back to the hotel. Not a time, but we had some beers at the hotel bar, whatever. And then we had to sit there, and we were like, yeah, hey, you ever heard of this guy? And I'm like, no, you? And you're like, no, maybe he's good, though. And I'm like, this is a joke.
Yeah, it was tough. Like, there were some trades and stuff. Like, there was other stuff that happened.
That's the legendary drop where Jerry says, you're going to want to hear
this. That's right.
This.
That was Corey Schneider.
Speaking
of
Luongo. Schneider for Bo Horvat.
Yeah, that's right. That was Schneider. It wasn't even directly for Horvat. It was for the 10th pick.
Yeah. Right.
And
I'll see if you can get as a tribute to that sound of Jerry saying, you're going to want to hear this.
That's right. In Jersey, you've acquired Corey Schneider. That was Lou still running the operation. Shanahan was working with the league office. And that was a different era. Freddie the Goat was a Maple Leaf. The Leafs were coming off like a historic meltdown, but they made the playoffs for the first time in a decade.
So I remember Bettman stopping by when I was there. I can't remember when, but he has the famous drop where he's like, are you guys drunk? Or
have you been drinking?
Have you been drinking? Was that in Buffalo?
Yeah.
That's where that grit grinder.
Or maybe Chicago. That's where we saw the grit grinder with the mustache.
No, we saw the grit grinder in Buffalo. Then the next year we spotted him halfway through the draft in Chicago and almost collapsed on the air because we couldn't believe we saw him with the cookie duster mustache.
No. And, by the way, he's high in charge, that grit grinder.
Yeah.
He is, like, bossing people around. He's, like, the head of security for the NHL, and he was absolutely crushed at the hotel bar.
That was in Buffalo where we placed eyes on him for the first time. He was at the lobby bar. If he wasn't on the draft floor, he was at the lobby bar.
Well, like, we first saw him at the lobby bar, and then you pulled me aside at the draft, and you said, I need to show you someone who is a dignitary for the NHL. And this guy had a Hawaiian shirt on at the bar, buttoned halfway down his belly button, and he was drinking rum and Cokes like he was going to be executed in the AM.
He was so thirsty the night before at the lobby bar.
Oh, my God.
He was putting on a clinic, though. Remember, everyone was coming to him. He was the center of attention. Like, he was a guy you wanted to party
yeah,
with.
Yeah, he was the yeah. life of the party, and that mustache smelled like rum and coke for 6 months.
And seeing him on the draft floor the
directing
next day.
Traffic. He was directing traffic.
It. Yeah, like, honestly, and more than just a traffic cop. This guy was the chief of police. Yeah. At the draft.
And I'm not going to lie to you guys. One of the things I was looking forward to Montreal was putting eyes on that guy on the floor. Yeah. I'm not kidding.
I agree yeah. with you. I need to see it. I want to see it. Because when we saw him the next year in Chicago, I thought he had just been kind of hired by someone in Buffalo.
Well, yeah, you're just a local guy.
Yeah.
Local guy to help out.
Right.
That might have been where you pulled me over and said, I need to show you something.
It was in Chicago because we saw him in Buffalo, and then we're like, wow, this guy, like, I guess he's a volunteer, and that's kind of cool. And then all of a sudden, he's running the operation the next year in Chicago, and it dawned on us he's like a big shooter in the NHL, and this guy puts on a absolute performance at the lobby bar every time the NHL rolls into town, but he doesn't miss a step the next day. Like he was primed and proper, man. He didn't look bad. He didn't sound bad. He was running operations in a fashion that I really respected, but man, he knows when it's time to party and when it's time to work. That guy is a legend.
Yeah.
Veteran for sure.
Absolute vet. All right, Roberto Luongo around 4:40. Ariel Helwani from ESPN, MMA insider and analyst, will join us on this fight island, Dana White's island. We don't even know where it is. We'll see if Ariel can tell us more about that. How's this fight going to translate in a week and a half? How many fights are logistically going to be pulled off down there? Will McGregor ever show up on the island? That and more next. All right, Roberto Luongo in about 20 minutes. And Ray will join us just after 5 o'clock. We've got Michael Lombardi, our NFL insider, on in the 6 p.m. hour. He's got a pretty groundbreaking scoop on Tua Tagovailoa and what he's hearing around the league based on Tua's health and his physicals. And it's not sounding so good for Tagovailoa. So we'll tell you more about that a little bit later this afternoon.
How much would his agent hate this garbage?
Oh, he'd be going crazy.
Nuts!
Yeah. It's potentially crushing. Like, the kid is still going to get drafted, and he's going in the first round. But if you're expected to maybe go 2, maybe 5, definitely in the top 10, and now Lombardi's saying, hey, everyone's hearing and everyone's watching, and this guy is brittle. And he's broken down, not only his hip, he said his ankle, his wrist, like lots of issues.
Oh, jeez.
With Tagovailoa.
Wow. Didn't Tagovailoa post some videos of him doing some work recently?
He did, but you got to keep that in context. Like, it's edited.
Oh, I get it. It's like you and I could have done those videos. We don't have the arm to make those throws, but the movements he was doing,
right.
Not complicated.
And they're not going to send out a bad tape. You know what I mean?
No.
Like, he's every throw is perfect. Oh, what a shock.
Yeah, like, yeah. I know.
They're not sending out the Doug Ford tape where he falls after taking the snap.
I don't think
that was Rob.
Yeah, Rob.
Oh, sorry, Ford. Rob. Yeah.
Doug was in the background laughing.
Doug pushed him afterwards.
Yeah, right.
Doug like, hiked him the ball.
Yeah, that was a tough 5-step drop. It gets everyone, you know, at some point. If you play quarterback enough, especially at City Hall, in an extremely tight Argo jersey, you're going to blow a wheel. It's totally understandable. All right, so the UFC is chugging along here. UFC 249 is scheduled to happen next weekend. They've secured an isolated octagon. My understanding is it's somewhere on an island, but now I'm seeing reports that it's actually in the continental United States. It might be somewhere in California, but I don't know that much. Our next guy knows everything. He's more connected in the MMA game than anybody else. He's a Canadian, good Montreal boy, ESPN MMA analyst, back on Overdrive. Here's Ariel Helwani. What's up, Ariel?
Hey, guys, how are you?
Yeah, we're doing pretty well, man. So where are these fights happening? Do we know? Dana White won't tell us publicly, but where are these fights going to take place?
Okay, so I think there may have been some confusion earlier this week because there was all this talk about making this fight on April 18th, and then Dana comes out with this outlandish island idea, and I think some people thought that the April 18th show is going to happen on an island. It's not going to happen on an island. This is what we know for sure. They're going ahead with the show on April 18th. They also have shows scheduled for April 25th, May 2nd, May 9th, May 16th, and what they've essentially done is secured a location in California, just outside of Fresno, California, in a place called Lemoore, California. There's a casino there called Tachi Palace that has hosted many MMA events over the years. They're basically going to take it over and turn it into a makeshift UFC headquarters, if you will, and do events there on the 18th, the 25th, the 2nd, the 9th, the 16th. These events were supposed to be all over the world, but now they're all just going to put them in one location to make things easier. In the meantime, for their international fighters, Dana said that they're trying to get this quote-unquote island to hold events for international fighters who can't come to the United States. But we're a ways away from that. That has not been finalized. Stuff that is a lot more likely to happen, barring any unforeseen circumstances, are these events outside of Fresno starting with next Saturday.
Are you going there right now in some kind of flying device?
No, I am not going. I will not be there.
Yeah, he's making a joke because it sounds like there's a helicopter behind you.
Oh, right now?
Yeah, it's all good. No, I don't know. It doesn't matter. We're good. We got you. We hear you. It's fine.
Is this better?
Yep.
Yes,
perfect.
Yes, perfect.
There you go. So I think the UFC, you know, I'm personally intrigued by these fights. I want to see some content, but I also believe they're putting themselves at risk in terms of the court of public opinion and potentially some backlash because of the pandemic and what we're going through, and specifically if one of these fighters needs medical attention. How do they handle that, Ariel? Like that could be a PR disaster. If someone needs to go to a hospital right now, the general public is not going to appreciate that. How do you think they handle that?
Oh, I mean, the whole thing is hard to digest, to be honest. As someone who loves the sport and has been covering the sport and devoted my entire life to covering the sport, it's a very bizarre thing because, you know, this sport in a very short amount of time has come a long way, and now we're basically going back to, you know, the early 90s where the UFC was running away from government regulation and, you know, just kind of trying to self-regulate to stay alive. And so they're saying that, you know, they're going to take all the precautions. They're saying that they're going to test everyone beforehand. But to your point, you know, right now the entire world is supposed to be at home, right? I mean, this is unlike anything any of us have ever seen in our lifetimes. And we're being told that, you know, if you're feeling a little bit sick but you can handle it, don't go to the hospital. What if someone, you know, gets a concussion? What if someone hyperextends their leg? What if someone breaks an ankle? You have to go to the hospital, right? Well, you know, now you're taking resources away from someone who is sick, doctors, hospital beds, etc. And so, you know, this is all self-inflicted, right? You're going into a fight knowing that you can get injured. So, you know, I don't know if it's the best look for the sport. And, you know, I'm kind of reminded of a famous line by the former NFL head coach, may he rest in peace, Dennis Green, who once said, you know, we are who they thought we were after a frustrating Monday night game. I'm sure you guys remember that line.
Yep.
And I'm starting to get the impression that that being said about mixed martial arts now, that we're kind of just confirming what everyone thought this sport was all about.
Do you have a pulse on what the fighters actually think about this? I know Dana's all gung-ho, and he said the fights are going to happen. We're going to set up the venue, and they're going to happen. Like, do you got a pulse on what the fighters are actually saying? Because I can't see them all wanting to be a part of this. I know they want to be paid. They got to make a living, but I wouldn't want to be doing it.
Yeah, I've talked to a ton of fighters over the last couple of weeks, and believe it or not, not only do they all want to fight, the fighters who weren't scheduled to fight are saying, like, how do I get on these cards? You know, these men and women are just different, and I've said this throughout my entire career. They possess DNA that I can't even fathom possessing. I can't fathom doing what they do, walking into a cage and fighting another human being with 4-ounce gloves. And I think they are just a little bit different than all of us, or a lot different than all of us, and I think they like the idea of the world watching them and, you know, the dangers involved. I think they all kind of get off on this sort of thing, and I have the utmost respect for them, but I don't know if, you know, they're looking at this in the most rational way. Some of them are just kind of ignorant to it, and it's not just about the fights themselves. it's about the training camps, right? Like, you have to train with other people. You have to be around other people. You're not adhering to the laws that are being put upon all of us right now. We all want to go out and work and do things too. But to your point, they don't get paid if they don't fight. They don't get paid a lot to begin with. And so for many of them, this is all they know. This is all they can do. So if there's a promoter out there that's dangling fights with purses attached to them, the majority of them are going to say, I'm in. And that's just the way they're wired. So, you know, I spoke to Israel Adesanya, who's the middleweight champion, 2 days ago, and he told me, like, don't look to fighters who, you know, go out there and take pleasure in beating each other up with all kinds of injuries attached to these fights and whatnot. Don't look to us to be the sane ones in all of this. We're not the sane ones, and we're just kind of doing what we've always been told to do and what we've always loved doing, and that's fighting, and, you know, you guys can worry about the rest. Of course, that's a selfish point of view, but that's just the way they are.
With Ariel Helwani, ESPN MMA analyst, we were discussing Conor McGregor yesterday, where Conor's a guy, like, the ticket sales, the gate is astronomical when he fights in Vegas or wherever he fights, and the media tours are an event that ESPN wants, that Dana wants, that McGregor wants. Does Conor McGregor fall in that same field you just described? Could you see him fighting in an empty octagon over the next 2 months?
That would be a major risk because he does generate a lot of money. I mean, his gates are usually $15 to $20 million. And Conor, for, you know, all the criticism, and a lot of it is deserved over the last couple of years that he has received for all the stuff that he's done outside of the cage, he's actually really taken it upon himself to be a positive influence during this time, almost like a politician. Like, he's putting out these, like, nightly addresses to the people of Ireland to stay at home and putting out workouts and things like that. I think he is liking trying to be, whether it's PR related or whatnot. I mean, he really has been putting out some positive stuff for people. And so I respect that greatly out of him, but who knows, you know, who knows if this lasts 4, 5, 6 months and he starts to get, you know, the itch to fight. He was slated to fight again July 11th. And so who knows if we get into a groove here and they're able to put on these fights and figure out a way to put on a fight, you know, involving Conor that would no doubt do very well on pay-per-view, but you would take a hit on the gate. Maybe they roll the dice and just have to do it. Because one of the things that people don't really know about is when the UFC sold, you know, to Endeavor in 2016 for $4.25 billion, no one showed up with a check for $4 billion. There's a lot of financing involved, there's a lot of interest payments, all that stuff. And so that's part of the reason why they have to keep this train rolling along. They need to from a financial standpoint. So they might just have to do that, but right now there's no talks of that.
He is Ariel Helwani, ESPN MMA analyst. The Ariel Helwani Show you can find as well online. You can download it, everything. It's always great to have you on. Thank you for doing this, Ariel. We'll do it again down the road, and stay safe, man.
Thanks, guys. You too. Thanks for having me.
There he is, Ariel Helwani. Little bit of a delay, but I think we got through that.
Yeah,
my joke, really went over well, too.
Wow.
That went over like a fart in church.
Yeah, it didn't go over so well. He didn't get it, obviously.
No,
he didn't,
and it was just like, yeah, I was like, I want to throw my headset off my balcony and just, like, drive to my cottage right now.
It's difficult to land a joke with a delay, though. I think that's a big part of the problem.
I was cringing at myself. I was like, oh, okay, that's really funny.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's not funny.
Well, we found it. I knew where you were going because it
sounded like he was in a chopper.
Yeah, it sounded like he was, honestly, in a helicopter.
Yeah.
And I don't know if
Marines
he was outside.
Going to the fights.
Right. But he didn't get it.
Well,
he
didn't know that,
it.
Though. Yeah,
and
exactly.
He wanted
he
no
know.
Part of it either. He's like, no, I'm not going there now.
Yeah,
no.
Not in the mood. Let's talk about something real here. That's fine. So thanks again to Ariel Helwani. I just saw my guy, Maurice Jones-Drew. Retweeted that picture of him and I having a great time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, having a great time on Instagram Live.
Sure you were.
Yeah, look at my big goofy smile. The grappler ripped that off. We were on for 25 minutes, and that's the pic that he posted.
Best buddy.
Yeah, my guy. In my Raptors championship hat representing Toronto. All right, Roberto Luongo will join us in about 5 minutes, and he had his jersey retirement a month ago. Feels like a year ago. Noodles, you were there. I was watching. I never told you that. I watched it live. I was in Florida when it went down.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. So I've got some I got some notes that will reveal about the big night. We'll see what he's been up to, because I'm assuming he's like everyone else. He's just hanging out at home down in Florida. But we haven't caught up with Roberto Luongo in quite some time, so we're looking forward to that. He will join us next. All right, Roberto Luongo is going to call in here in just a moment. We haven't caught up with Roberto in a while, although you would have seen him prior to the whole self-isolation border shutdown about a month ago, Noodles.
Yeah, I mean, hung out, and there was a little post-game post-game, because they played that night against the Habs.
Right, they won that game.
They did, and, you know, so it was a pretty good game. Sat in the luxury box with Roberto and some of his friends, Bieksa and Alex Burrows. There were some pretty big names from the league there.
Yeah, I got a chance to watch it because I was on the other side of the state, but I had access to that Panther game and the pregame, and I threw it on, and it was high-quality stuff.
Gary Bettman was there.
I saw Gary. I saw yourself out there. I think it was Kevin Weeks in attendance,
Weeksy was there. Rob Tallis, the goaltender coach, spoke. There was a lot of people that showed up and had a good time.
Yep. Well, the first number retirement in team history down in Florida, and that was about a month ago. Again, feels like it was over a year ago. But here he is, one of our favorites, longtime NHLer, Roberto Luongo, back on Overdrive. How you doing, Roberto?
What's up, guys? How's it going?
Well, we're just talking about
living
that
dream.
That speech you gave about a month ago, the jersey retirement. Were you nervous? Have you recovered from that, or what?
Yeah, I mean, I was. You know, that's always a nerve-wracking thing, a speech like that. And throughout my whole life, I was never great at speeches, so I was trying not to memorize one. Just put a few notes together on a piece of paper, names and people I didn't want to forget, and then, you know, just let it roll off the tongue after that. So I think it came out okay. I guess I did a decent job. Didn't forget anybody, which was the most important thing for me.
Yeah, it was cool. I thought the organization did a great job, and the part of the whole video that I think went viral was when your jersey was going up. And your kids were just like wailing away. Your boy was crying, man. He was so emotional. And you were trying to keep it together, I could tell. But what was that experience like, just being there with your kids, your wife, and seeing the number go up?
Well, it was funny because I saw everybody was saying, oh, he's so emotional seeing the family name go up. Like, is that name's going to... It's like, no, he's crying because he wants me to keep playing. He's not because he's seeing the name. He's crying because he wants his dad to keep playing. He's been crying for a year, so it was tough. You know, it's tough for me to see things like that, you know, because they love coming to the games, and watch me play. And, you know, we got to that age now where they understand it, right? And he's really starting to get into hockey, and he loves it. So it was cool for him to, you know, be part of a NHL team. So it was tough for me to see that, you know, when I told them originally that I was in step away from the game, that they both took it really hard and started crying, which made me cry. Obviously, it was not, you want to keep it going because they could see in their eyes that they loved it, right? And it was tough for me to tell them that.
What was the big gift? Usually the organization gives the player a gift for retirement, 1,000 games, whatever it is. What did the Panthers throw at you?
They gave me a big-ass blackjack table with, am I allowed to say that word on radio? I'm sorry, I don't know.
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah, you say it all the time, buddy.
Yeah.
So it was cool. It was, you know, custom. It had, you know, the Panthers logo, names, and all that kind of stuff on it. So it was pretty neat. So it's pretty big. I mean, I got to find a nice spot for it in my game room.
Lou, what was the biggest transition, obviously stepping away and retiring? What did you find the most shocking, other than just, you know, not going to the rink on a schedule? What has been your biggest transition into retirement?
Well, this is the thing, right? When I first announced my retirement, the first 2 or 3 months, I didn't have anything going on at all. So it's starting to get a little bit tough for me to... You know, to know what to do with myself. I was getting up in the morning and I was just like, all right, so what am I doing now? Like, I would just turn out the window for like 3 hours and be like, I don't know what to do with myself. And I was starting to get a little bit down, you know, and starting to feel like, wow, this is not great. And then once August, September rolled around, you know, the team called me and said if they wanted to come by. And
training camp and hang around and watch and this and that. And that's how I kind of started getting a little routine going, and started feeling a bit more, you know, comfortable and being around the guys and the team. And that's how everything came about. So it was, once that point reached, I was fine. I was, you know, felt like I was still, you know, part of the group. I obviously wasn't playing, but I mean, I think just the fact that I was still involved, it really kept my mind where it needed to be.
With Roberto Luongo, Noodles has spoken about his experience doing the same thing, leaving the game and then all of a sudden kind of hanging around with coaches or hanging around management. And Noodles,
how brutally honest they are.
How brutally honest they are. And how, like, behind the scenes, did you have that same experience where all of a sudden you're like, wow, this is how they talk about us when we're not around?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the funny part, right? I mean, I knew that that kind of stuff kind of went on, you know, when I was playing. Obviously, when you're behind the scenes and you're in it, you know, you realize, you know, how it is. And that's the first thing I said. I told Tally, our goalie coach, I was like, wow, I can only imagine what they were, you know, what they would say about me, especially, you know, when I would go through some stretches where I wasn't playing well. You know, I could only imagine what they would say about me. So it makes your mind think a little bit like, wow, this is pretty bad. But, you know, I keep myself PG-13. I always, you know, just try to stay even keel.
With Roberto Luongo, I'm looking at your stat sheet, and Noodles has expressed this many times in the past. You had a run where you basically didn't allow your backup to play, or your coach didn't. And there's a four-year run from 03-04 through 07-08 with a lockout mixed in between where you started or you played in 72, 75, 76, 73. Like that. 70-plus 4 years in a row.
Yeah.
I got to believe, like, you might have been the last of a dying breed. Like, I don't think we're ever going to see that again in the NHL.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I mean, the game's changed a lot since then, even though it's only, like, a little over 10 years ago, 10, 15 years ago. I mean, I think the game itself, it's faster, it's harder, it's more demanding, especially for goaltenders to play the position now. And with the travel and the schedule, I don't think it's possible to do that. I mean, it just takes too much of a toll on your body. So, I mean, I don't know how the young guys, maybe they feel a bit, you know, more energetic throughout the year, but I know that for myself, the last, you know, 5 or 6 years of my career, I started finding it very difficult to play that many games. And the especially the second night of back-to-back, it was always a welcome night off for me.
Lou, you had a long career, very successful. You know, people know your personality now on Twitter, you know, how much fun you have and kind of your sense of humor and stuff. When you look back at your career, you know, some of the things, some of the ups and downs and everything you went through, are there a couple, you know, real, I guess, quality memories that you think back and either, you know, proud or you laugh about? I saw you on Twitter the other day where you talked about in a playoff game having to leave and then come back in, and, you know, that type of, is that what stands out for you? Not just, you know, game 60 on a Tuesday night in Carolina. Like, what are the types of memories that come to the forefront?
Like, what do you mean? Like going to the bathroom and stuff? Or
yeah, I mean, please give us more on that.
That was a regular occurrence, so I mean, that doesn't really stand out. But yeah, I mean, listen, I've played a long time. I mean, there's a ton of stories that you know that have happened throughout my career that are funny, that are sad. You know, there's all kinds of different things that happen. Of course, I mean, you know, some of the best memories obviously involve, you know, the playoffs and the Olympics and that kind of stuff. But you know, I think that the ones that I love the most are just, you know, stories that maybe other people don't see, right? Behind the scenes in a locker room or you know, on the road, on the plane, or, you know, stuff like that. That those are the things that I miss the most, you know, hanging around the guys and going on a road trip and you know, just funny things happening, you know, behind the scenes. I think that those are the things that I miss the most about the game. And obviously all the other stuff, you know, everybody's pretty much aware of.
With Roberto Luongo, you could not have played the majority of your career in more of extreme cities and circumstances. You're either in the, you know, furthest northwest you can go in Canada in a hotbed, on the west coast, you know, Vancouver, very good team, cup finals, maybe the most relevant team in Canada because of how well they were playing, winning the President's Trophy, going to a cup final. And then you can't go further southeast than the Panthers, you know, the opposite of a hockey hotbed. how when you look back on your career, are you going to appreciate that you got to play in two extremes in the National Hockey League?
Yeah, I was actually just going to say that I appreciate both. For, you know, they bring different things, but I enjoyed my time with both teams. I think you know, obviously playing in Vancouver, the pressure is high every night, but you know, you have to embrace that stuff. It's part of you know, being an athlete and being under a microscope. And when things were going great, I mean, it was unbelievable to be in the city. And obviously, when things were not so great, it was a bit tougher. But you know, I think for me especially, I grew from those types of moments where you know maybe things weren't going so well, or you know, I failed it a little bit, and I was able to you know, just be stronger, get back up, and get back at it, and develop as a human being by going through those things. So I think that was a huge part of not only my career but my life as well, as who I became as a person. And down here as well, Florida. I mean, listen, obviously the team hasn't had the same success that I had when I was in Vancouver, but you know, it's home for me, and I love playing here, and I was happy that I was able to at least get the team to 1 year in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and it was a good series against the Islanders, even though we lost. But you know, I played some good hockey, and unfortunately, you know, we ended up losing in six games. But I would have wished it was a little bit more success, especially you know, in the last few years. I thought we were close to being there, but we just missed out.
Lou, what's your take on the big market? I know you had the opportunity. You just mentioned playing in Van and how things weren't that great when the team wasn't playing well. Are you glad you had that experience of playing in a big market? I played a long time in Carolina, got the opportunity to play in Toronto. It's kind of a big debate sometimes, like, why would anybody want to go there and spend the last few years of their career with the media pressure and all the media around? Are you glad you experienced that in your career?
Of course, definitely. And that's what I was, you know, kind of trying to say is, like, even though, you know, sometimes when things are not going well, which happens to every player, every team, you know, they go through stretches where you're not playing your best hockey. It's just normal for everybody. You know, it's a bit harder to move around the city and be in public. But when things are going good, there's nothing better than that, you know.
Yeah,
just being on top of the world, you know, and everybody just, like, looks at you in a different way. So, you know, the positive definitely outweigh the negative for me in that regard.
With Roberto Luongo, we've had this discussion on the show over the past month with everything shut down and the uncertainty of when it's going to come back, but let's just use an arbitrary date. Let's say July 1, the league starts back up, and game one of the playoffs. Do you think the goalie would be at an advantage or a disadvantage with such a long layoff?
It's tough to say. I think it all depends on what the player's doing, right, over this playoff. You know, so I know some guys are still training hard and working out hard, and I'm sure some guys are probably taking it a little bit more easier. So to me, it's whoever is training the hardest and trying to stay in shape and then as close as game shape as you can be. You know, obviously it's hard to find. I don't know if some guys are going on the ice or not, but whoever's, you know, giving it the most of their own as far as working out and trying to stay game ready is who's going to be on top. So I know that our trainer is in contact with a lot of the guys throughout this process, making sure that everybody's still working out and staying in shape, and because we don't know when, you know, we're going to start over. So when we do, we want to be ready.
Are you staying in shape? You don't want to be one of those former players that looks like a beekeeper.
Well,
what does that look like?
Yeah, thank God I got my Peloton last year, because you know, I've been riding that like, especially since we started quarantining, I've been riding it like five to six times a week, which is key, because I don't like to lift weights and all that kind of stuff. I'm not a big fan of that stuff. So at least I get to enjoy 45 minutes of punishment on the bike instead.
Yeah, it's important to stay active. You got to keep active. We know it.
Well, that's what happened the first 2-3 months of retirement. I wasn't even doing that. I was just like laying, you know, on the floor at night with a stack of Oreos on my chest watching TV. And by the time July rolled around, I gained 20 pounds. And I was like, oh, so something's got to happen here, or else it's going to get bad.
Yeah, that's like a Niagara Falls cliff waiting for you, man. If you start going down that path, it's tough to drag it back.
Exactly.
Well, we always appreciate you finding time for us. Stay safe and healthy down there, and we'll do this again down the road. Thank you, Roberto.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Stay safe.
There he is, Roberto Luongo, keeping active, staying active.
Stay active.
Yeah.
Who said that? Was that O that said it?
No, I said it originally. I said it to Kadri, remember?
No, I know, but just now you said, was it you or?
No, I said that. Yeah, I said it. And it blew, like, went right over his head. Why would he know that reference? It's such an inside baseball reference. But that was cool, man. I'm looking back at his numbers. Like, they were great. He's a Hall of Famer. But you, like, those, he had that 4-year run again of 72 plus appearances. And 1 year in 03-04 with Florida, he played in 72 games. He had a .931 save percentage.
Yeah, he owned
931.
He owned me. I don't know, Grappler. I don't know if you can find out how many goals I scored against him. But he was one of the first on the scene of the big, tall goaltenders with the big pads. And it was just, I found it like, I was shooting against goalies like Craig Billington and Chris Terreri. And then all of a sudden, this guy shows up, and his pads look massive, and he looked giant in there. And you're just coming down. You're like, that's intimidating. There's nowhere to shoot.
Yeah, well, clearly you weren't alone. I mean, there were many pucks getting past him.
No, he's an all-time great, if you ask me. I think he was fantastic.
Yeah, and his stats are, you know, like top 10. He played forever. Yeah. He was consistent. He was healthy up until the end of his career. He had a great, great run. Represented the country, World Juniors, top 5 pick. His resume is off the charts. So we appreciate Luongo joining us. Ray Ferraro in the next hour. Michael Lombardi, our NFL insider, around 6 o'clock. Overdrive continues on the TSN app.